Howdy. Howdy. My name's Chris Raymer, a very grateful recovered drug addict. Look at this old crowd. Hey, it's like 10:30 in the morning. Y'all know that, right? The only people that show up here are the people that have been up all night long. That's it. That's, yeah. God dang, it's good to see you. And I'm a little kind of overwhelmed. I need to tell you, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll talk a little bit about that, guys. But I mean, I'm a huge fan of Drug Addicts Anonymous. I have a little home group in Ingram, Texas, for good and for all group, and you know, I actually kind of belong to a bunch of little DAA groups down there. And sitting here watching y'all. I get to speak a lot, guys. I speak around a lot of AA, you know, and you'll do the little talk before, and you just look around, and everybody be whispering at each other, and, you know, this looks like Jerry Springer this morning, you know. Sitting up here, looking in here, and everybody's just 10,000 miles an hour, and I know it's, you know, some of y'all are probably loaded, but, I mean, I think it's, you know, no, a lot of coffee and energy drinks, but it's just a lot of excitement, you know, and that's what drew me to Drug Addicts Anonymous. It's just what, it's my first Drug Addicts Anonymous meeting was in England, for heaven's sakes, and I was over there doing a talk over there and at that group, and it's just a different bunch of folks, and I knew a bunch of people there that had started it and got excited about it there in England, God, I've been excited about it ever since. We're finally getting organized in this country. It's taken us some years, but here we are. So, God bless y'all. Where can I start with this? As always, I want to mention, thank the committee. Bless you guys for asking. God, it's all of you guys that paid for admissions to come and donated for this, that, and the other. Thank you for doing it. It's because it's travel is a bear. Of course, a lot of y'all know that, but I mean, the cost of the ticket to get me from Texas, I could have flown to Europe, you know, 2 years ago. And then today, it's, you know, it's just nuts. It's brutal. So anybody that can help participate in that way financially, God, thank you very much. If you go to the hospitality room, drop a dollar in the little bucket, you little knucklehead. Okay. But I sure appreciate my host picked me up, and I got here in one piece. And the trick will be in the morning to see if they get me back. That'll be to the airport. That's always I've never been not picked up, but I have had several situations where I didn't get taken back. So, folks in recovery, folks, we are a sensitive bunch. You know, I'll say this going in the door, guys, going, please, as always when I share. I'm going to share this morning. I'm watching the clock. It's on the side I can see. It's right here. I'm watching it, 10:30. I'll be done before. Okay, yeah. I'm going to share my experience, guys. My experience may be completely different than your experience, and that's perfectly okay. Doesn't have to be my way, guys. If what you're doing is working, high five, buddy. I mean, have a wonderful life. I just think that's the best. And I get emails from people all over the world, folks, that can identify with what I'm talking about. There's a lot of us that struggle with this, and it's not near as complicated as people want to make it. But I want to share some of that, and this is part of my story, and if it makes you uncomfortable, I'm sorry. I'm not taking anybody's inventory. It's just, you know, if you're doing 90 meetings in 90 days and that's keeping you sober, just rock on. That's the coolest. No, I'm just joking. It is. Maybe it's been so good to see some of you guys I haven't seen in years. I got some cats that I've seen, and I mean, God's all over this. I need to tell you, it started Friday. I had to do a little workshop on Thursday in town, and where I work. I work at the treatment center, and I've been there for, God, forever, and I do clerical work for this place, and we had this long, drawn-out deal, and it was nice, but drawn out. It took forever, and I'm in San Antonio. We got a little condo downtown San Antonio, and I would go up there because I'm flying out at the butt crack yesterday. You know, I had to be at the airport at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I just, you know, so I spend the night there. So it's just a 15-minute drive instead of a 60. Ingram's like 65 miles west of San Antonio. I'm up in the hills, and I'm walking down the street because that's what I do. I'm looking at the architecture, all the little homeless guys downtown, and it's just. We're just a few blocks from a homeless shelter and down there with a pocket full of ones. And I'm just, you know, just visiting, you know, walking down the deal. And I see this guy coming at me. And he goes, Chris. And I look at him and recognize him. He'd been to treatment, the place I'd worked for a while back, and was doing pretty good until he wasn't. Y'all follow? Yeah. And they got loaded and they kicked him out of the halfway house and he's heading back. What are the odds that I'm walking down this street, y'all follow, and I walk into this guy in downtown San Antonio? And I've seen that several times here. What are the odds? All of a sudden, I hadn't seen you, and all of a sudden, we're getting a hookup for people that have been. That's what this whole thing is about. If you don't hear anything else I'm saying during this little hour, guys, please hear this. That's exactly what this is about. If you stay around long enough, and I don't mean sit in the corner and not say anything, but I mean actually push yourself to be a part of this a little bit, you're going to. These are my peeps. I hadn't been here 15 minutes, and every one-eyed blind guy in the place had come in every 6 seconds. I mean, come on. And I love it. It's just like, oh, these are my peeps, you know? You look at my phone, and I've got them like that. So-and-so, one-eyed guy. So-and-so, one-eyed guy. I take little notes because I'm getting old, you know? But, yeah. It's just the coolest. And the sad part is I know there's a lot of people out there in all of our 12-step fellowships that are not experiencing what we're experiencing today.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks they're not. Guys, I get non-stopped with it. I've just got to say it. You know, I've been in the industry I'm in, and of course, I get lots of people calling, lots of people coming into treatment, you know, and they look around and they see the steps on the wall and say, oh my God, I thought this was going to be different. So then I said, why? What's up? She says, man, I've tried the 12-step stuff. I've been to AA. It's just, it doesn't work. Okay, and then I talked to him for a few minutes and find out they did exactly what I did for 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't do jack. All they did was go to a bunch of meetings. Not one place in this book does it say, go to a bunch of meetings and you'll stay sober. I'm not knocking it. It's a part of this. Y'all understand? It's just, it's not the solution. What freaks me out is these are the same people that want to defend their right to do it wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Like, really? Man, come at this with an open mind, guys, that maybe I don't know it all. I'm still to this day, guys. If I don't do anything stupid in a couple of months, I'll have 35 years of sobriety. But I'm the guy that couldn't get 30 days of sobriety in 7 years. But it's the same thing. In 30 years, I just continue to try to grow. I continue to try to learn new things. And that's why I go to the panels. And, that you know, I want to be in the rooms when other people are speaking. Because you'll always hear something cool. Oh, shit, I never thought of that. You know, after all this time, that's what this is about. That spiritual path we were just talking about is open and ever evolving. Man, I don't want to live off a spiritual experience I had 35 years ago. 34. We don't front here. Okay, I'm just saying. It could happen, but you know, I was born out in Odessa, Texas, oil fields. My father was a printer out there, and I got hit in the eye with a rock when I was about 60 in 1964, and then we moved to the hill country soon after that. And Dad liked water, and then you know, this was when Texas still had some water, and we don't anymore. It's unbelievably dry down there, you know. No kidding. I was out there earlier. I'm looking around and somebody says, oh, I wish the weather was nicer for you. You know, welcome. I said, buddy, this is heaven. Are you kidding? What are those things up there? Are those clouds? Buddy, it's nasty in Texas right now. But we got to the hill country, and I've got an identical twin brother that's some of y'all know Myers. He and I caught the bullet. I've got two sisters that have never had a problem with alcohol or drugs. I thought they could smoke a little joint or drink a little wine and then never have a problem. At Christmas time, we're always, come on, drink up, you know, and we've been trying to get them drunk for years. I have experience with this. I can show you how to do this better, you know. they're just freaking. No, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. We used to say, yeah, me too. And your point is, let's do it. No, they don't want to do that, guys. This is why it's crazy. We were raising a Leave It to Beaver family. Y'all follow up. Mom was a professional artist. She was very progressive at the time. We were raised with lots of different people in our houses, and it was a wonderful upbringing. Pops was the hardest worker. I've got his work ethic. You know, yes, he was an alcoholic. I caught that bullet. Guys, we got to all get straight with it. There's majority of this is genetic. Yes, if you're raised by a pack of wolves, that can affect you. Okay, but I feel like equal opportunity. I need to stand up here and tell you I was not raised by a pack of wolves, and I still turn out to be an alcoholic and a drug addict. It's just we spend a lifetime listening to people in treatment want to point a finger and blame why they're an alcoholic and addict. That stuff exacerbated the problem and made it worse. It did not cause it. Genetics, got y'all understand? Yeah. This is fun for a long time, and then it becomes not so fun, and then it becomes a nightmare. And when it becomes a nightmare and you're still doing it, you might want to look at this, folks. Genetics. Eggy, little spermy. Ah, coming to get you. Oh, yeah. If they can drop the F-bomb from up here, I can talk about little spermies, okay? I'm just... Oh, man. We ended up high school. I got a job early on because we wanted to buy a car and that kind of stuff. We didn't have a lot of money in our family. Hindsight, looking back, we were church mouth poor. But I got a job bussing tables at a place and then started cooking at this little place. And I was like 16 years old. 16. This is before child labor laws came along and they could work your little butt off. And it was pretty cool. And me and a friend went down on the river and drank a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine. He stole it. I don't know where he got it. But y'all, it was just like a regular little small bottle. And he took a couple of sips and said he didn't want any more. And I made sure that he meant that when he said it. Because I just drank enough to finally hit my bloodstream. I said, this is pretty good. I'm going to see what this is about. And I drank the bottle. And I didn't get squashed. I'm just sitting. Guys, it was January 1971. It was the month that Bill Wilson, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, passed away. I took my first drink. And I remember walking across that field, a big old full moon up there, and cold out there on the field. And I'm just thinking, this is why Pops drinks. I understood. It's the first time in my little young adult life that I ever felt comfortable in my skin. And I've heard every speaker talk about it. Y'all understand. Guys, alcohol and dope is not the problem. It is the solution. There's a great line on 155. Bill Wilson's talking about Dr. Bob. Says he had much knowledge about himself, but he didn't understand fully what it meant to be an alcoholic. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I called myself for years alcoholic, guys. I didn't know what that meant. And cut to the chase because I want to cover some stuff here. But I am. High school football, we drink. Sometimes we drank too much, but you know, no, I'm not getting any kind of trouble. I'm showing up to work every day. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Graduated, sort of. I did, but at the very bottom, I took my SATs on LSD. Yeah. I thought it would be a great idea. You know, I mean. They didn't appreciate it at all. But anyway, there was a period of time, guys. I got to tell you, growing up there, my senior year of high school, there was the summer before, and that was the same, you know, right after I'd started drinking, and there was a bunch of arrests. There had been a narcotics agent running around the hill country. Y'all remember 13th floor elevators? The musicians? Oh, come on, guys. There's like three heads nodding up. The rest of you are losers. You need to look it up. Y'all need to Google it. Yeah, this guy, oh my God, they were the bomb. Psychedelic rock and roll. They lived in the town where I lived. They started right there in Central Texas. Anyway, when we were out there, you know, tearing it up out there, you could go to the bowling alley on any night of the week and buy pot, buy heroin, buy LSD, mescaline. You could buy any drug you wanted. I couldn't buy alcohol. I'm not old enough. Y'all follow? We had to get somebody over in the other part of town to buy it for us. But we, yeah. It was nuts, folks. And then all these people, there were 64 sealed indictments. All these people got arrested. I'll never forget that night. I'm sitting on the side of my bed. It's about 11 o'clock at night, and all you could hear down there in the valley are policemen, sirens, because they executed all these warrants all at one time. I mean, and it was, some of y'all's butts are puckering right now. Even though and I didn't intend to trigger some of you, but yeah. But that's what I was doing. I'm sitting there sucking up cushions. I'm thinking, oh my God, you know. I said, please God, don't let me die. I don't want to be arrested, you know. And we were out there smoking pot with everybody in that. Everybody that got arrested, we knew. Y'all understand? We've been partying with. For some reason, we didn't get arrested. Not a clue how. I mean, thank you, Jesus. I mean, we just didn't. And I remember making a deal with God the next morning. The sun comes up and we didn't get arrested. And I said, God, okay, I promise you, absolutely, I'll never do a drug again. Because drugs are bad. And I didn't for a long time, guys. I drank, went to Houston, was in a food business, was a restaurant. Again, my little work ethics are awesome. And I'm climbing the ladder. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing out there. And it's all working good. This is like by the late 70s. I'm starting to experience this thing called depression. Now, a lot of you guys in here want to talk about your clinical depression. Let me assure you, for most of you in here, not everybody, but 95% of you, it's not clinical. It's untreated alcoholism. Number one symptom. Everybody thinks, I'm going to be so good because I'm going to get sober. Okay, but if you just don't drink and don't do anything else, y'all understand? Right. A lot of nodding heads. Can I get a witness? Yeah. Bill Wilson talks about, on 64, Bill Wilson talks about this spiritual malady. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out physically and mentally. But nobody wants to talk about that. The only thing book says is you got to stop drinking one day at a time. This book never says that.
No.
Not once. No, I'm sorry. Some of our literature talks about one day at a time. Y'all understand? It says we live life a day at a time.
Yes.
All right. I'm like that guy we were just talking about, splitting hairs. I know that. I'm sorry. Okay. And I'm seeing doctors and starting to get some medication, and I'm moving around a little bit. Some of you guys maybe have done that geographic, you know, because I'm convinced if I could just move here, I'd be okay. I'll never forget calling my mom one night late, and I says, I got to get out of Houston. I'm drinking a little bit too much. She said, well, where do you want to go? And she was going to send me some money so I could move. And I said, well, I'm thinking about Austin, Texas. And this is back in the day, home of the armadillos. Yeah, who knew they drank and did drugs in Austin, Texas? I mean, I don't know. And I got a job at a big old country club there, sous chef at this place. And I mean, I'm on the outside, everything looking pretty good, you know. On the inside, I'm dying. And I'm not a happy camper. I was in Austin for a couple years, moved to Atlanta, Georgia. Couldn't stay there because they didn't sell booze on Sundays. It was stupid. And I moved back to Texas. Oh, I'm in the restaurant business. I need to get out of the restaurant business. Started doing some other things. Who knew sales? You know, salesmen, they drink too. And it's nuts. I'm changing stuff around, and I can't. I'm holding it together pretty good, though, guys. Y'all understand? I'm not getting in a lot of trouble. I'm miserable. Guys, it's sooner or later, it talks about in the book, you're going to get to a place where you can't imagine life living with it. You can't imagine life living without it. Guys, if it was still working like it did for me when I was 18, I'd still be doing it. It stops working. You know, that little window of opportunity is oh, my gosh. I got married on one of my geographics, went back to Houston, Texas, and met this little girl, and she was a waitress at this place I worked. And we got married, and she was a sweetheart. And I drug her up to North Texas to be closer to my twin brother, and got a job at a country club, and we bought a little house with a mortgage that you wouldn't believe. Y'all understand? I got to be a semi-new pickup truck. That's the Holy Trinity in Texas, right? Job, girl, pickup truck. Yeah, it's the same here too. Trust me. But we went out and everything was pretty good. But I'm not a happy camper. Under my wife's guidance, she suggested that I might go and see a doctor about this depression. And the docs, again, same thing. I've got good doctors, and they're prescribing antidepressants. And I'm not being straight with them about the alcohol. I'm telling them I'm drinking, but I'm not telling them how much, for heaven's sakes. You know, no sense in that. because it's not going to make any difference. If I was just depressed when I drank, it'd be one thing. Y'all understand? But when I stop drinking, it gets worse. So I'm all confused. I'm on these medications. And this is the early 80s. And, oh, my God. Everybody in the world, folks, was doing cocaine.
Yeah.
Miami Vice. Y'all understand? People that didn't do drugs was doing drugs, okay? You couldn't go to a wedding without doing drugs. It's just this. Cocaine, yeah. We all thought we were Don Johnson, little drug runners. I still hear that song on the radio. Everyone, oh, man, yeah. And it triggered me. No. We're doing cocaine, and I'm with this guy. And anyway, we'd done had some beers at work and done a little of that outside issue stuff. Went home, had a pushing match with my wife. I don't remember what the fight was about, but I came back a few hours later. She'd asked me to leave, and again, I come from a family. We don't do that nonsense. There was no touching anybody angrily like that. And apologized when she let me back in the house, and I told her the truth. I told her she didn't know about the cocaine. She knew our checking account was nothing, but she didn't know about the cocaine. And y'all know how funny that is about drugs. Oh my God, I had never been in a pawn shop in my life as long as I was drinking. Right. Once I started doing drugs, y'all follow? Mm-hmm. Who knew that they would give you $5 for a electric shaver? Oh my God. God. The things we do, I know. And I promised her I'd stop. And I can't share it. And I don't care what fellowship I'm sharing in, guys. I can't share it with this without saying it. When I looked her in the eyes with tears and begged her forgiveness that night for acting like a poot and promised her I was going to stop drinking and drugging, I meant it with every fiber in my body. You need to hear it, folks. There's always somebody want to make a joke of it. You little alcoholics and addicts, boy, if your mouth's moving, you're lying. You need to bite my ass. Because that's not true, folks. Y'all understand? Everybody wants to paint pictures that we're all a bunch of misfits because we're alcoholic and addicts. That is not my experience. There's some misfits out there. Y'all understand? There was a book out there written. It was one of the great little quote in there. It says, we're not different than other drinkers or druggers. We're not different than other people. We're different than other drinkers and druggers. My response to alcohol and drugs is different than somebody else. Follow? But other than that, I'm just like everybody else. Some of you little guys, you can't find as much success in your life because you continue to want to blame everything that's wrong in your life on your alcoholism and drug addiction. Yeah. Quit. I got a guy I'm sponsoring right now. He's cheating on his wife, you know, and he wants to be, well, what do you expect? I'm a drug addict. This has got nothing to do with nothing. You're a dirty dog. That's what you are. Okay, let's go. Let's, yeah. God, we want to bless. I was sober for a week and a half, came home, I'd had a beer with a chef after work, patting myself on the back because I didn't get drunk. We didn't do none of that nasty cocaine. She packed. She could smell it on my breath, and that was it. And I'm a mess, folks. I go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I spent the next 7 years in and out of AA. I was in and out of Narcotics Anonymous. We didn't have any DAA at the time. Every time I'd come in, again, with the motivation, I'm going to do it this time, I could do this right, and then hear it. This is my story. If I say anything in here that'll make any of you uncomfortable, this is it. I'm just saying. You walk in, and they pinch you on the cheeks, and you're the most important person here. You keep coming back. Everything's going to be okay. And I'm sitting there for an hour listening to you tell stories that I can't identify with. Y'all understand? I'm not smoking crack. I'm not doing some of that. Like, I hear people in treatment all the time. It's all the same thing. No, listen. No. If you think it's the same thing, sit down with an alcoholic and do his fifth step, and then sit down next to a little crackhead and do his fifth step. Yeah. The what? With a chicken? No. I just. Oh my God. I'm in and out the nicest people in the world, guys, but every time I come back in, they're trying to scare me back in with their stupid war stories. Always followed by well-meaning people, okay? Like, but you don't want to end up like me, do you? And let me tell you what happened. And I went to prison 15 times, and I chopped up 20 people and put them in plastic bags. And I've been in this, and I've done that. Y'all follow? And it's like, oh, okay, you know? And I'm sitting there thinking, I can't possibly be an alcoholic. I'm not knocking your story, guys. Okay, Friday night, tell a story. I understand that. I'm just saying, every time a newcomer comes back in, they didn't get scared off the first 20 times they came in. What do you make you think they're going to do it this time? Oh, my God, I finally remembered he ate out of a dumpster and I quit drinking. That's not... It's never happened, guys. If you could connect it with the symptoms, maybe you could get some headway here. But they didn't do that. Nicest people on earth. I'd sit in there, arms folded, scowl on my face, waiting to be offended so I can leave. In and out. Picking up chips. Just in and out. I'd leave and hear the old bastard at the table. You know, I knew that little one-eyed guy wasn't ready. Feeling the love here now. Yeah. 87. I've discovered this substance called methamphetamine. I've always been wired a little fast. I laugh about it, guys, on the podium. We can just talk about it like that. I mean, Some of you, I know we got a lot of opiate addicts in here, and I just, you know, little potheads. This does not look fun. Oh, no. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I've got a toaster, and I'm going to fix this thing. And it's just... Let's go. Let's get some shit done. And I'm drinking, and I'm doing all this anyway. But I'm a miserable. The medications are not working. I'm on 7 prescription medications a day. And these are all doctor prescribed. I'm not out there doctor shopping like some of you losers. Y'all follow this? I have some legitimate ailments here. Turned out to not be legitimate. Y'all follow? It turned out to be untreated alcoholism and drug addiction. I just say it. But anyway, I got came home, picked up a stack of return checks in my little ratty apartment, and just was done, guys. And I've been in AA for 7 years. I'm on all these medications. I've done everything you've ever asked me to do. Y'all follow? I've done therapy. I'm in IOPs. I've done all my triggers list, and I've done everything I'm supposed to do. And I'm not making fun of that. I'm just making fun of it. God damn. Dang, again, we continue to talk about alcoholism and drug addiction as a disease, but we want to treat it like it's a behavioral problem. If I could stop myself from using, folks, I would have done it a long time before now. I'll never forget crawling out of a dumpster when I was young, eating some chicken. That's why I hate cats, because I always had to fight a cat for my dinner. You know, I wasn't living on the street, guys. I had an apartment, but I didn't have enough for drugs and food. So, you do what you got to go do. I remember looking myself in the rearview mirror again, looking, thinking, God dang it, if my dad could see me now. You know, there were some low spots, folks. There was plenty of reason to stop. Unfortunately, didn't have the answer of how to stop. Because everybody still believes, oh, this is a disease. But if you really want it bad enough, you can get it. I don't give two poots how bad you want it or how bad you need it. If somebody doesn't tell you how to get well, you're not going to get well. If you're the real alcoholic or the real drug addict. Y'all understand it? Guys, I've said it from a million podiums. You little dope fiends hiding out in Alcoholics Anonymous coming over to AA, y'all are never going to hurt us. The people in AA that are going to be hurt are the people, we call them hard drinkers. Yeah. They didn't have to work the steps. All they got to do is come in there and share their opinions about nothing that they've had any experience with, and there you go. I've seen it, and we see it in. Man, what a world we would live in if you could just talk about stuff you've got experience with. How many of y'all have ever been to a meeting like that? We're going to talk about the 4-step today. And the first little guy said, well, you know, I've never actually done a 4-step, but we'll shut them down at our group. Time out. Bye-bye now. We'll talk later. Not going to do that. I ended up with these guys. I walked in the door and a little girl stopped me from leaving. And I got real self-conscious and she stopped me. She's about 19 years old. She sat me down on a chair. She said, sit down, cowboy. You're not going anywhere. Her sponsor was across the way and couldn't get to me. She didn't sponsor me. Y'all understand? I asked her. She said no. Some of you in here have an idea of who you think is going to help you. The truth of the matter is, on this spiritual path, you've got no idea who God's going to use to change something in your life. And for me that night, it was a little 19-year-old girl that sat me down in a chair and wouldn't let me leave. Because if I'd have left, I'd have died. I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. Y'all follow? She was just as kind as could be. Got me a cup of coffee and some paper towels to clean up the mess. And, you know, and that was it. Chairperson had seen me in North Texas and looked up. And again, I'd been AA and NA for years. And this guy had seen me around. He said, "God dang, we got a newcomer coming back. And he'd been around a long time. And why don't we tell Chris how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps?" What? I sat up. I was like, "What?" I never heard that as a topic. Y'all understand? I heard because I was ready for it. Caught me off guard. "Let's tell Chris how we got here." Y'all, I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but I'm gonna. I don't give two poots how you got here. Nothing personal. I just don't care. It's because it's all about me. You know. They went around, guys, and I Lady Catacornic, I can't not talk about it. She got her a car. She was about, you know, a little better than a year sober and had a car keys, and she was jingling car keys up. She had a brand new car in a parking lot. She'd got her a brand new ride, and I'd just been turned down 2 months earlier for a $500 car loan to buy a newer old pickup. Yeah, one where the windows would roll all the way up. You know, that's... got turned down. And here this little girl got her a brand new car. And this guy next to it started a little landscape business. He was all excited. He started, yeah. Lady at the end of the table, she was older. I was 35 when I got sober. She was in her 40s, and she'd gone back to art school. And she'd got her degree, and she was all excited about it. She had a little sketch pad. She'd sit in meetings and sketch, like some people knit in the meetings, and she'd sketch. And it just, loving her life. And I'm a big art fan. I come from a family of artists. I'm just talentless, you know. But here I am. I'm looking. I said, "Oh, my God, you went back to school, you know?" Guy next to me jumping because I can't see him coming. He's got his billfold open, and he shows me these little Polaroid pictures of his kids. And he'd come to AA and married this little girl. And AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus, you know, and they got married and had a couple little kids. And he's sitting there crying in that meeting talking about his family. And I'm less than 24 hours away from trying to commit suicide in a little dirty apartment with two stinky ferrets and a dead ivy. Stack of bills. Y'all understand? These people gave me the one thing I needed more than anything, which was hope. Dadgummit, that's what we're supposed to be doing in these rooms. Please hear me say this again. You cannot scare a drug addict into recovery. You might scare them into treatment. You might scare them into the rooms. But you are not going to scare them into doing this work. We're all different, folks. But the thing that ties us all together in this room, look at it. God damn, got some beautiful people in here. We got some butt ugly people in here. We got a thousand pronouns. I don't know. I don't care. What ties us all together, guys, it's not all that experience. What ties us together is we've all got the exact same symptoms. Same symptom is getting me is getting him. But I'm 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't explain what an alcoholic is. I can't tell you what a drug addict is because my story is always different than yours. These two old guys got me after the meeting. I'm looking at that clock. They got me after the meeting, and they sat me down and asked me to sit. And I'm detoxing. And they said, "Chris, let's try to help you figure out why you can't stay sober." And I'm a little indignant because I've got, you know, a psychiatrist on speed dial. You know, it's just... And now these two old country bumpkins are going to stop. Show me, yeah. This is a stereotypical Texan, y'all follow? Belt buckle about the size of a dinner plate, you know, big old white Stetson on like that. White snap shirt, you know, it's like, yeah. He's got a Cadillac out in the parking lot with bullhorns on the front. Y'all think I'm making that shit up? That's just an honest fact. And he opens the big book up there and he cherry picks it. We didn't start reading on the title page. Y'all understand? I don't have time to sponsor anybody. That's because you're starting on the title page reading with them. Nowhere in the book does it say do that. It says give them a big book. Y'all find, and then let's help them figure this out. And they sat with me and they showed me up in the front where it talked about, in the doctor's opinion, the physical craving and the mental obsession. And these guys understood. They wanted to find out. In 25 minutes, I found out that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. He said, Chris, God dang, you can go to any one of these meetings if you want to. And I've been doing it ever since. Some of y'all qualify for a bunch of meetings. I'm just saying, you know, it's okay. God dang. But when I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't talk about drugs. And when I'm in Drug Addicts Anonymous, I don't talk about alcohol. When I'm in the Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting, I don't talk. Well, I do talk about the farm animals then. These guys got me real busy. I'm watching because I don't want to run out of time. These guys got me real busy, folks. And I need to tell you, the next morning, they told me that night. They said, Chris, if you'll work these steps real quick, we can guarantee that you can have a spiritual experience. You can recover from this crap. And I started to argue with them because I'd been around AA long enough to know Narcotics Anonymous, God forbid, you know, you'll always be recovering. You know, and they just rolled their eyes and says, Chris, why don't you be quiet for a minute and just listen, all right? And they showed me in the book where it says you could recover. And you can. Doesn't mean that I'm going to leave recovery. Y'all understand? Just, as long as I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that obsession goes away. 34 years sober, guys, and I have never, not once, thought about taking a drink. Okay. But I talked to a lot of people. I've had some rough days in 34 years. And there was a couple of times that I wasn't sure I really wanted to be here. But not once did I want to take a drink. That position of neutrality Big Book talks about in this 10-step stuff is real. But it's not as a result of sitting your butt in a bunch of meetings. It's as a result of actually doing this work. And these guys said, Chris, if you'd come with us and get active, I guarantee you can recover. And the next day, we went to a 10 o'clock meeting and they showed me how to make a pot of coffee because I'd never done jack. They figured this out that night. Chris, have you ever done any service work? How can I help anybody else? I can't even help myself. Wrong thing to say to those guys. Y'all, anyway, yeah. After the meeting, we went in the back room and we did a third step prayer. They explained it and we got on our knees and did a little third step prayer. We went and got some Mexican food and came back and they gave me a little notebook and says, Chris, let's start working on a fourth step. I get emails from all over the world. People listen to these talks. Says, don't you think that's a bit fast? I've been in AA 7 years. But even if it had been my first visit, that is not too fast. If y'all read the history sites, I got cards up here, guys, with my email on there. If you email me, just say stuff. I'll send you a bunch of websites that you can get on. You can look at the history. Nobody, guys, in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we had a success rate of 75% in 1955, when the book went into its second edition, we didn't take any, nobody took longer than a couple of weeks to work the steps. You know, most of these guys, within a few hours, they were already making their amends. Bill Wilson's in Towns Hospital on his ninth day, detoxing, making amends from the hospital. He stayed sober the rest of his life. But we want to sit here and argue that it's perfectly okay for you to take your time to do the work. It's not. And if you're around somebody that's telling you to take your time, you need to find somebody else. I'll take a stand. I'll draw the line in the sand. These people are killing people in our fellowships. Yeah! They'll probably beat me up later.
I'll protect you.
These got me real busy in service, guys, and up to my butt in it. 2 weeks into this deal, I've got a completed fourth step. I'm ready to do a fifth step. They're showing me the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. We're talking about it. And the guy said, man, if somebody asks you to sponsor, you say yes, and then come get me because things are fixing to change. And I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck, and it dawns on me that obsession to drink is lifted. I'm surrounded by liquor stores. My cocaine dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live. I can see him up there in these apartments sitting on my couches. Watching my TV. But it's Friday, and I got money in my pocket, and I don't want to use. I'm done. I walked into that little apartment, cranked on some hot jazz, and fed the ferrets, and just had a nice life. I mean, I don't know. The next week, the guy said, Chris, next Wednesday, we're having our group conscience, and we're thinking about nominating you for the chairman of the cleanup committee. I says, I am so not interested. But you've been in the food business. You know, I'm sure you know how to clean a kitchen and all this. I do. I'm spotless. And this place needs it. I understand that. But I'm the newcomer here. Remember the most important person here? You know, I'm not. Well, come anyway. Come to the group conscience. I've never been to a group conscience all these years. And I went to my group conscience. Y'all need to go to group consciences, folks. You need to pop on. If it's Zoom or if it's in person, you need to go. It's just to see what this is about. And God dang it. I went in there and they, first line of business, and they nominated me as chairman of the cleanup committee, voted me unanimously in. And I was not laughing. Y'all understand this. I'm looking at these people like they just, yeah. And I went in after the meeting with a little resolve, and I just said, okay, all right. Listen, I need a list of the rest of my committee members so I can organize a cleaning rotation for the club. I'm in the food. I know how to do this, and I get that. He spit coffee clear across the kitchen. He said, Chris, there's no committee. You're the janitor of this group. Handed me the keys. And I was going to stay away for hours. No, I'm not ever coming back. And I stayed away for 2 days and then went back in. And I went in Monday. It was a Friday afternoon, and my brother let me off work early. And I went to that club, and I locked myself into that place, and I cleaned that place like a big boy. Y'all follow? I can't not tell this. Y'all know this place was spotless. It's 5:30. The meeting starts at 6. I got coffee made. I'm ready. I'm sitting there in my little Fruit of the Loom T-shirt, soaking wet. I've worked my ass off. The matriarch of the little group walked in. I could hear her in there. She was 140 years old, and she was about this tall. She looked like a little question mark. Like it sliding in like that. And I could hear her squealing in the kitchen, and she came back around and went to the bathroom, and she's squealing back there, and I said, what the? And she looked around the corner. She said, did you clean this place? Yes, ma'am. She walked around behind me. I'm sitting at that little table. And she walked behind me, put her little bony arm around my neck, gave me a little back hug. I can still feel her breath on my cheek. I've told the story 1,000 times. I want to cry every time I say it. She said, boy, we need you here. I didn't try to commit suicide, folks, because I was drunk. I didn't try to commit suicide because I owed every person in Texas. I tried to commit suicide because I felt absolutely useless. And this little lady told me exactly what I needed. She didn't sit down and we didn't do a big book study together. Y'all understand? We need you. This is what this whole thing is about, folks, is service. Nobody in those years in AA or NA were trying to hurt me. Take your time. Easy does it. You can't help anybody to your sober year. You can't do this. You can't chair a meeting. You can't. I was lucky I ended up. My prayer is that you end up in a group or a part of a group where there's nobody telling you what you can't do.
Right.
I'm so tired of everybody making up these goddamn rules. You can't chair until you do this. You can't date for a year. You can't change any, make any major decision. You can't do. No! My book says exactly the opposite. My book says you're going to have to make some decisions. You're going to have to do some things. It doesn't say anything about dating. It says make God number one. Pay attention. Just get on this work. It makes us look cultish, folks. The rigidity of this. All of us are going to do this different. Some of the beautiful speakers that we heard earlier today talked about this. Guys, we're all going to do this in our own way. But we're going to do it. That's the key piece. I got to mention, in 2001, there was a study done in Baltimore with drug addicts, heroin addicts, and IV cocaine addicts. They did a study of this of folks in recovery. Basically, they showed that people that have sponsors did better than the people that didn't have sponsors. Which was a no-brainer. You know, for us to look at this little study. But what the study went on further to show is that people that were sponsors did better than everybody else. Y'all understand? Bill Wilson understood it sitting in Mayflower Hotel when he had to make a decision. I'm going to go drink or I'm going to go find an alcoholic. I knew I needed another alcoholic as much as that alcoholic could need me. And he goes and finds somebody to work with. That's what it's about. We got too many. You're not sober long enough to work with anybody. Of course you are. This bullshit, of course you got your story. Go do with that little lady. Share a little hope with that newcomer. Show them where the We're all teachers. Go into that meeting. Look at the little guy that's sitting by himself looking at the floor. You don't have to breathalyze him to find out. You know, y'all understand? He's new. Go get him and drag him. I watch Byers do it all the time. He's a master at it like that. He'll go grab that little guy. No, why don't you come sit up here with us? And he'll move some people over and get the little newcomer to come sit with him. Holy sh! How many times did I sit in a meeting? Go in, not say anything. Go through a meeting, not say anything. Get up and leave, and everybody's talking about going to get coffee. And okay, I'll meet you at the diner. And I'm sitting there, and I look around, and I'm the only person sitting there. That's so not okay. That is not okay. Bill Wilson talks about it on 14 and 15. He talks about work and self-sacrifice for others. I work with others when I go to my meetings. No, you're not. That has got nothing to do with nothing. Thank you for coming. Y'all follow? Even if you shared. Working with others is work and self-sacrifice. Stop afterwards. Go out there and look at that little guy that's walking around the parking lot scared to death. Go grab him. Knucklehead, you're mine, you know. Because that's what it's about. I got to watch this real quick. I need to mention, Big Book is pretty clear, guys. If you look at the forward to the second edition again, the first edition, they're talking about exactly what our marching order is. It's to help the newcomer understand what the 12 steps are about. That's all we're supposed to be doing. We're not a process group. Y'all understand? Y'all can do that anytime you want. At coffee's a good time to go do that. But, you know, yeah. So many of y'all in the room, I know people around the country that are suffering from it. I had a guy tell me in AA one time, there was a great quote out there that talks about, you can't learn about the light by constantly analyzing the dark. If all we're doing is talking about the bad stuff, y'all follow? That's why I hate meetings that start with, who's got the problem? Who doesn't have a problem in here? I got, but you see constantly talking about that, you know, who's got the solution? I mean, come on, let's say, who's got, share some light. When we're riding bicycles, guys, the first thing these guys, I started riding early on, and it's one of the best things I ever did. Exercise is the deal. Movement. If you're suffering from anxiety, the solution is not a benzo. The solution is get up your ass and move. Doesn't mean you got to, it doesn't look pretty. You should see this old man run. It is not pretty. I'm just saying, y'all follow? Nobody's taking a double take looking at me. I got to tell you that. I look like I'm injured. But I can knock out a pretty quick 6 miles, you know. It's just, but I got to tell you, you get that stuff moving in your body, and all of a sudden the depression lifts. All of a sudden, Big Book talks about it. Exercise, we can't ignore that stuff. But when I first started riding, the guys used to say, Chris, if you're riding down the road and you see a pothole in the road, don't look at the pothole. Look at the path you want to go on, and your bike will take you right there. I don't care if you're Lance Armstrong. If you're looking at the guardrail, you're going to run into the guardrail. Stop. Don't look where you don't want to go. Look where you want to go. That means you need to surround yourself with a bunch of positive people. You need to get to be a part of this, folks. And sitting in a meeting, just not saying anything, is not being a part of it. Find you a little job in our fellowship, and you'll stay. Volunteer. Self-pity kills more alcoholics and drug addicts than anything else. It's a bitch. No, it is. I'm gonna tell you, it's the toughest. And it's such a little spot that you can get into. And the only thing I know to get out of it, Bill Wilson talks about it. Talks about it in 62. He says the root of our problem is self-pity. And what we got to do is we got to get out of our heads and start thinking about somebody else. Sometimes I get real busy or at work and I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to. And then sometimes I can just shut up a little bit and slow down a minute and says, yeah, you got time. Go over here and get hold of this little knucklehead and visit with him a little bit. And all of a sudden, I'm strangely lifted up. It's like what the book talks about. It's about service. Go out there and start talking to some people about Drug Addicts Anonymous, about the cool fellowship we've got. Because I'm going to tell you something. This is as special as it gets. We can't let it fail. We got to continue to grow it. because there's a lot of people dying out there because they're just miserable sitting in these meetings. We get out there and start showing them what we're supposed to be doing. And Bill Wilson in 1961, 10 years before he died, wrote an article called The Dilemma of No Faith. But he talks about noticing our low success rates out there. And it's comparing them with the early days when we had so many people staying sober. And then now today we don't have so many people staying sober. And he's concerned. In 1961, he's saying, you know, perhaps some of these people didn't get the sponsorship that they so sorely needed. Because if all we can do is, you know, keep coming back, pat them on the ass, and we're not doing that. That's not an adequate presentation of the program. Adequate presentation is sitting them down, showing them a big book, says, buddy, let's work these steps so that you can have a barn-burning spiritual experience that'll change your life forever. Well, I don't believe in God. I don't care.
Right.
I hate God, in fact. I don't care. Work the steps. Because you're going to get connected to something you've never been connected to. The spiritual warfare in this, in our heads, is there for everybody. It's that little voice in your head saying, I'm too busy to do that. I'm not smart enough. Here's my faith. I'm not sober long enough. That's the spiritual warfare. I can't volunteer for that. I can't do this. Guys, stop. God wants us moving. God wants us useful. Get in there and pick up cigarette butts. There's hotels all over the world we can't meet at because the cigarette butts flipping. Fact. Go pick them up. Anything you can do to help us carry this message is going to be absolutely awesome. Guys, I got to say it. It's the absolute coolest to sit there and watch the little guys you're sponsoring and then walk in one day and you're seeing the guys that they're sponsoring and you get to start seeing the whole lineage thing, you know, how that works. It's like, oh my God, that's how it works. Folks, there's people out there that'll die if you don't stay sober because they weren't going to hear the message from me. They're not going to hear it from Lindsay. They're going to hear it from you. I don't know how that works. I'd like to think I can help everybody. I can't. There's certain people I can crack like an egg. And there's bunches of people I can't. We need everybody. The organizers, the treasurers, the little Zoom meisters that helped us get online when our world changed. You know, those little technical guys that we all thought were weird. They're little angels that God sent us, you know. Welcome to the chief angel right up here. I know that's, come on guys. What would we do without them? We would have been, yeah. I'm going to end this with this little quote, guys. And I got to tell you, I'm going to mention, I got little cards. You jot down my email. If you want some stuff, I send stuff all the time. Got great articles. My old sponsor, Mark, used to have me collecting this stuff forever. And I don't know. There's some great stuff out there. There's a lot of crap out there. But there's some really good stuff out there, too. And history sites and that kind of stuff that can kind of give you an idea about what we're doing. And I'll be glad to send you our formats for our little DAA meeting. It talks about the literature. Every meeting we go to talks about the literature. You know, that's where we bring our time. Just, you know, if you're interested in them, holler. I'd be glad to stay. But damn sure would like to stay in touch. Don't text me because I can't keep up with them. I just can't. But I do the best I can. But what the heck. There's a great little quote out there, folks. And I just got to mention it. William James, one of Bill Wilson's favorite authors. Some of you scholars in here, I'm sure, have read his literature. Varieties of the Religious Experience. So this literature is beautiful. It's really, it's not a page turner you're going to take to the pool. You know, this is like, what did he just say? It's just, you got to stay focused to get through it. It's kind of like reading Nietzsche. You know, it's like, what? Yeah, but it's beautiful. One of the things he said in a book I read of his, act as if what you do makes a difference. Why? Because it does. I love you guys. Thank you.